Hello, everyone, and welcome to Total Football Debate, episode 34 of our weekly podcast. It's just the, I guess you could call us three, the original three now, that the Cossy or Jason Statham, whatever you want to call him, has joined the team. So it is me, Jason Cookie, this week, coming into, well, to be honest, I was a bit shocked myself when I was doing a bit of the research for today's show, because I didn't actually realise how many teams had played two games. So that was a bit of a surprise and involved a bit of cutting. But obviously off the back of the transfer market show and whatnot, I think it's nice to have a bit of extra football back in our lives. So we've got quite a few games to discuss, boys. But first of all, how are we both?
What a few games to discuss. We've got a lot to discuss.
Lots of controversy.
Yeah, a lot of controversy, and then even more today. I mean, we do pick our freaking times, don't we? You know, come on, and all of a sudden Sky Sports News have got all their yellow ties out and breaking news banners rolling across the bottom. So we have got a lot to discuss, and I don't know where the hell we're going to fit it in. So we may have to breeze through a few of them where possible, if it's possible, but we'll see how we get on. So how I've decided to do it, just to make things pretty straightforward, is chuck all the teams that have played two games in the first segment, if that helps you both. So let's start with Leicester. Let's go all the way back to what, the not the day after, it would have been 2 days after, wouldn't it, the show when we did that, because Leicester were playing in midweek on the Wednesday on BT Sport, and it happened again to be against my team. But obviously, as usual, when we do a double game week discussion, we don't mention the other team because we'll just focus solely on Leicester's performances across the two. 1 point from two games, that was, because it was a 3-2 defeat against Spurs, and I still do not know how the hell that happened, and a 1-1 draw against the 1-1 draw specialists for the last few weeks, Brighton. So how do you feel Leicester will be feeling about having those two games and only coming away with 1 point?
I mean, you're licking your wounds, really, if you're Brendan Rodgers and the squad now, aren't you? I mean, the Tottenham game is the big blow, but to then drop points against Brighton, of all teams, not just saying that because I'm a Palace fan, but given the break that they've had, I think it was it 20 days between games? They had an FA Cup game, but 20-day break from the Premier League.
Yeah, it was about 3 weeks, wasn't it?
They got, you know, they got their big injuries back, their big hitters back in the back line that they needed. And let's face it, the Tottenham game, they were second best the whole game, in my opinion. Brighton, I have to say, I didn't see it. But look, to come out of a game against Spurs and be that far, I mean, I'm always a great believer, to be honest, that actually the whole argument about playing Thursday, Sunday or Wednesday, Saturday, whatever, I don't believe if you're a top team and you're a good team, that actually makes it. I actually think it makes you better equipped than the team that have had the break. So I actually think, to their detriment, 3 weeks out of Premier League action has probably worked against them. But look, the way they lost that, I mean, let's face it, you can't sugarcoat that Spurs game. 12 seconds left and to be 2-1 up and then lose 3-2.
I still don't believe it.
There's no sugarcoating that. There just isn't. It's naive on their part. When Spurs got it back to 2-2, the way that Tielemans just casually sprayed the ball, you know, he had so much space in front of him, it was naive. But then to come out of that game and go into that Brighton game, with all due respect, I know Brighton have had a good season, but there's always one or two mid-table clubs or bottom half clubs that have a good season and kind of challenge that top eight. But you've got to go into that Brighton game after that Spurs game and get 3 points. And to again drop points near the end. I mean, yeah, if you're Leicester, you're licking your wounds. And that's, you know, Spurs game was 3 points chucked away, even though they didn't deserve it, but they did literally chuck it away. And to come out of that Brighton game with a single point, Yeah, after the break they've had and the injuries they got back, if I'm Brendan Rodgers, I'm sitting there and I'm wondering how.
I'm glad you alluded to that, because obviously we're not going to talk about Spurs yet until it gets to their part, because they are one of the two the teams that play two game. I'm glad you did pick up the fact that that wasn't a smash and grab. I mean, Leicester would have been lucky to get a draw, let alone a win. Spurs absolutely, I mean, it was one of the best performances I've seen Spurs do this season, funny enough. And to see Leicester 2-1 up with, you know, 94 minutes gone was painful. But the manner in which that they lost that was just, I mean, I don't know how, I honestly cannot put into words how it was even possible.
And is there a naivety about Leicester now? Do they think they're bigger than they are?
I don't know. I honestly can't. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the highlights, because I know you did watch, because you can believe it. To have your best player do what he did. I mean, I don't even know who the pass was going to. No, when he just passed it into feet.
All I can speculate is he's kicked it away thinking the final whistle would go. But you've still got to play the game out. There was still a play to be made.
Well, he proactively looked to put that ball through the middle, because I can't remember who
it was. It looked like he was trying to split the defence, yeah.
I think the problem with Leicester, they're at that point now. They're at that trajectory where, obviously, they won the league, they've won the FA Cup, they've gotten to Europe. And there's bits of the team now that are starting to, they're past their peak and they need to transition. So Jamie Vardy being one. Now, actually, I don't think, you know, I'm this kind of big cheerleader, but Daka for Vardy, I think that's a decent replacement. They've done well there. What they haven't done so well is, well, they've had to deal with the Tielemans situation for the last 6 months. And it doesn't look like he's gonna stay. So that's a key cog in the midfield gone. They got the chap from Lille in on big money. And he hasn't really hit the ground running. Wing backs, they seem to be doing all right. Obviously, youngster James Justin and stuff like that. And Pereira. Pereira's had his injury problems. But there's, for me, if you like, it's the spine of the team that they need to transition and make good again for Leicester. So when I say that, I'm talking about the back line. Now, Soyuncu had that one season for Leicester where he was amazing. Then he got linked with the likes of Man City in these big moves that never come. He's never hit that form since. They've not had a consistent back line all season, which, to be fair, I think any team would struggle if that was the case. And for me, the biggest problem that I don't think gets talked about enough, to be honest, I think, and I've always said this, to be honest, even when in their success, I think one of their biggest, weakest areas is Schmeichel and the goalkeeper. He offers, for me, very little confidence for that backline, especially when you've got a backline that's kind of chopping and changing every week because of injuries. You need a solid goalkeeper. But for me, there's just little mistakes that are creeping into his game. Obviously, he's getting on a bit now. But there's no real competition for him.
I wonder if there's a mentality issue. I mean, it's not happened too many times, but when you think of like collapses, Brendan Rodgers has been a part of, well, I'd say two of the top 10 most memorable collapses in Premier League recent history with that game and and as they call it, Cristanbul in the last 15 minutes against Palace, which Jason will remember. But there seems to be a mentality issue. What we've got to remember, just briefly before we move on, is Leicester, both those games were at home.
The other problem as well under Rodgers, let's not forget, it's not just about individual games they've bottled, but they've bottled top four the last two seasons in Europe, you know. And like you say, I think it's a big mentality thing.
I think Leicester have got a rough period. They've got Liverpool, West Ham, Wolves, and that's thrown in around the Europa League playoffs as well, Conference League playoffs. They've got a rough few games, to be fair. So I think they could.
Break.
They do. They do need the break. Mind you, not too sure what that's going to do. Let's go to one of the other teams. I mean, they're becoming a bit of a specialist. Jason's favourites of one all draws these days. That's now 1, 2, 3, 4.
Don't tell them that, because they're going to get the victory parade bus out, because a draw to them is 3 points.
That's 7-1 all draws in their last 13 games. Three in a row. Leicester, Chelsea, Palace. Mm-hmm. One all draws. So, I mean, Brighton, I mean, I wouldn't actually say that was a bad two games to get a one all draw, to be honest, Chelsea and Leicester. I guess they're still they're just tallying up a few points here and there, aren't they? I mean, they're ninth in the table on 30 points. I mean, they're done. Yeah, they're easy.
We spoke about this a few weeks ago, but there's a few teams in that kind of lower bracket, Brighton, Palace being one of them as well, where we spoke about how many draws. I think Palace on 24 points, but that's made up of 5 wins and 9 draws.
So there's Southampton are another one.
Yeah, so there's a lot of teams like that this year, which, look, the old adage is, look, as long as you're getting a point on the board and you're not losing, and when you talk about kind of those bottom half teams, the difference between a relegation battle and not, you'd much rather pick up 9 draws out of 9 games and pick up the odd couple of wins than kind of 1 win and then lose 7 on the bounce, you know? So that, for me, is a massive difference. I mean, for example, if you take half of those draws away from Palace, Brighton and Southampton, the difference between those losses, you know, draws being losses is massive. So I think there's a little bit of overhype on the fact that, oh, they're going to qualify for Europe and they're going to break into the top 6 or 7. That, I mean, I'm not just saying this as a Palace fan, but that is absolute nonsense. Let's, like, calm it down a little bit. I don't think they've got enough about them to do that. I mean, a lot of people haven't said this, but their defence looks a lot better without Lewis Dunk. Webster, I think, is very, very good. Obviously, this is all without Bissouma as well, their so-called star player. So, fair play to Potter. You know, he's got the right ethos. They've got an ethos and they stick to it. But yeah, I don't think it'll amount to anything. That they'll give, you know, the kind of top 8 a good run for their money. But again, for those that keep saying, mind the gap, let's not forget that they've not finished above Palace since they've been in the Premier League, and the gap is still only 5 or 6 points. So
let's rein that in and wait till May, shouldn't we?
Huh? He had to get that in there, didn't he, Cook?
Biased at all, is it?
I mean,
It's fact, and I said that to the guy last night that was going mind the gap, and he got 8 or 9 likes on his little mind the gap comment. Did anyone come back when I reminded them that they've bottled it the last 3 seasons and we finished above them? No, so...
Hey, look, they are where they are, and they're doing a great job of what they're doing with at the minute. You can't deny that.
No, they're doing a good job.
The only thing they're missing, really, is a striker who can finish off the moves, because they do dominate a lot of games as well. I mean, the one on the weekend, they dominated the second half.
Interesting, really, we talk about the equaliser. Interesting we talk about, they're only a strike away from missing games, but again...
Morpé is only 3 goals off the second top goal scorer in the Premier League this season.
Well, this is what I mean. So he's got quite a decent record, and you just mentioned...
The chances they create, they need someone who can do it a little bit more often. If they're looking towards top 8 in Europe and that, they need a striker that can finish them more often.
I'll be honest. I don't think... Scott just mentioned the word with Leicester. I don't think their problem is, like Scott said, Morpé is like the second or third highest goal scorer. I don't think their problem is necessarily that. Purely, I think their problem is a little bit of, which hasn't been spoken about by the media because there's a lot of love in for Graham Potter at the moment. But I think in that squad right now, there's a mentality issue, because you could see it in the Palace game, prime example. Palace were awful in that first half, and Brighton should have been 2-3. They should have been well away with it. Then for Palace to come in and nick a goal and almost win it.
That's what I mean. But they can't finish off games.
But
they dominate so many.
But I'm saying also, there's also an element at some point, like they used to say 1-0 to the Arsenal, where Arsenal used to dominate games, but they still only won 1-0. Now, that was nothing to do with Arsenal's quality. And with Brighton at the moment, I think there's just a little bit of naivety tactically, where they'll try pummel, wasn't going in. What happens? They find themselves a goal down. So I think the key with Brighton is for them to make that next level up isn't necessarily even a quality player, but it's a mentality issue.
I don't think Brighton realise that they are as good a mid-table team in the Premier League as there is now. Like, it's almost breezed past so quickly. you know, Graham Potter went from being this manager that took over at Brighton while they were down there in 15th and whatnot. And then all of a sudden, from last season, it's like they, and this is due to the capitulation of all the other teams, like your Everton's and your Leeds, all of a sudden bombing back down there. All of a sudden, they find themselves in this place where they still feel like they should be 15th, 16th. Like, they don't seem to understand that if they wanted to, I feel like Brighton could finish games off. If they really wanted to, I just don't think they believe in themselves enough. And you're right, it gets to that point where they're like, shitting hell, we're 1-0 up against it, this team here. They're almost a bit catch 22. They're not good enough to hold a lead, but they know they're good enough to get a goal back because they always get a goal in the last 10 minutes. If I was to look at the stats of all the teams and where the goals have come in time, I bet Brighton are top for the final 10 minutes and injury time all season. Because they did it again. They did it in the game, in the two games we're discussing, one of them. So I do think they are, I mean, they could do with another striker. They've only got three. Morpay, Welbeck. I mean, Welbeck's glass ankles. So, you know, when he gets a game, but even he's not that too bad. Morpay's actually having his best season so far. He's almost done what he did in 33 and 37 games in 20 games this season. So he's having a good season. And I still find it surprising he's 25. He seems to have just been around for ages where he's never elevated, but maybe he finds it. Who knows? Anyway, we move on. We'll go to Chelsea and then obviously we'll roll in and then discuss the other two teams because they're completely separate from all the games that were kind of... It seems like these four teams played one another, it looks like. So Chelsea got the 1-1 draw against Brighton and then obviously yesterday they beat Spurs 2-0. The Brighton game for Chelsea perspective, I mean, Cookie, I'll come to you because obviously they're near us up there in a sense. I mean, at one point we were wondering whether they were going to collapse and I guess that question's still open, bearing in mind they've, you know, played more three or four games more than Arsenal and Spurs. Obviously, good result beating Spurs. Not that, I mean, I'll come to the Spurs from a Spurs perspective in a second because it was a pretty shabby performance, to be honest, from us. But what's going on with Chelsea at this moment in time? I mean, are they anywhere near Man City and Liverpool, do you think? Or do you think they're just having a tough time?
I just think it's come from the manager. I think a lot of it is come from the manager's mentality that's gone onto the pitch and in their performances recently. I mean, he does have a point with the amount of games they've played in December and January and a lot of others have had postponements for one reason or another.
Won it 18 games to the lowest team's nine?
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Burnley have only played seven or eight games, which is ridiculous. For, I don't know if it's all COVID. But yeah, I mean, I know they've got this problem at the minute with managing minutes with the midfield. Like Kovacic has had big injuries. I mean, they're managing Conte's minutes and with his hamstrings because they're worried that as soon as he starts running around like he normally does, he's going to pull a hammy. Are you trusted in Jorginho in that midfield on his own? Not defensively, at least anyway. I don't think the Lukaku situation has helped as well. That's got all blown out of proportion.
Well, judging by the game yesterday, I kind of see why Lukaku's frustrated because he highlighted it again like midweek.
Yeah,
they don't play
he's
the
not
ball.
Getting the service.
Mind you, I did see him with the ball and I thought, bloody hell.
Well, there's
but they
that
don't
well.
Put it to his head, do they, at all?
No. I mean,
never in the end.
They don't play to his strengths. They don't play it into him and he holds the ball up and let the wingers go past. I mean, he played two up top. Didn't he play Hudson-Odoi up top with Lukaku alongside him?
The formations were the most odd. I don't know what on earth. I mean, Doherty, I'm sure, was playing in centre mid at one
there.
Point. It was an odd one. I mean, Jace, look, if you've got Mateta up top, you're not going to play it to feet, are you?
No. And
like, I mean, come on, we're not fucking stupid here.
This is the argument I used to have with Hodgson and Benteke and everyone. Benteke's shit. Well, hello, like, knock, knock. What happened when Hodgson's last handful of games, when they actually just crossed the ball big to Benteke and didn't listen to Hodgson? What happened?
Well, this was kind of my argument. And you know, I don't want to digress here with Vlahovic, But this is my argument as to why I don't know if Vlahovic is the right player for Arsenal, because I cannot remember the last time Arsenal really ever liked crossing the ball as a target man. They've never had it.
He's not the right player, and he's not the right player for our style of football at the minute.
No, he's not. Well, he's not. To be fair, these tall players aren't really. I wouldn't be surprised if it since Man City and Barcelona's success. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if these tall strikers come fade back. Out.
But they could make a comeback. I mean, Vlahovic is one of a kind in terms of he is quite strong on the ball. He has got a head on him. He's got a bit of pace about him. You know, he's a bit like a younger version of Ibrahimovic, they reckon.
Yeah, but then if you don't cross the ball, as Scott says...
If you don't cross the ball, it's just null and void, isn't it?
That's the one thing Serie A still does. Serie A is very old school. They love crossing the ball in. They're basics, back to basics, Serie A. You know, they love a target man. All their big strikers have always been, you know, these target men, really good in the ball. That's why Ibrahimovic can play.
Vlahovic, Dzeko's having a wicked season.
Yeah, absolutely. But Chelsea have got to do something. I mean, they're eighth in the last 10 games in form. They're behind Villa. So, says a lot. I mean, they dominated. Well, the first half was there. I mean, I don't know what Spurs were doing. And then we capitulated since the Harry Kane one, but that's whatever. So, and Chelsea in the end deserved it because they never looked like they really were going to go for it. And rolling into Spurs then, because it makes sense ticking them all off. The Chelsea game, there's not a lot to say. They deserved the win in the end. I didn't like the attitude behind it. I don't think Conte knew what to do because, I mean, it was the most odd starting 11 I've seen from Spurs in ages. And bearing in mind, he did have access to Lo Celso and Ndombele Ali. I think it was his way of kind of just saying, this is what I want going forward and add to it and get rid of the ones I've left out. And looking at today's news, it looks like maybe they got the hint because all three of them are now linked with moves away. So you've got Dele with Newcastle, shock. We called that one a mile away. Lo Celso to Sevilla and Ndombele in a PSG deal, whatever that's going to be. It looks like he's made his point. And to be honest, I'm kind of glad he did because I'm sick of seeing them players go in and out.
Are you worried he might quit before?
No, not me.
I reckon he's a bit disgruntled and he don't look happy.
I don't think he'll quit.
Conte never looks happy, Cook.
No.
Never looks happy.
I'll tell you why he won't quit in January. Because, one, he's an experienced manager, but you're kidding yourself if you think that Spurs need five or six players. And if you're...
I don't think he'll quit in January. I reckon he might quit later on. He might not get the summer. He might think...
Because I think, personally, someone of Conte's experience, given his relationship with Paratici at Juve previously and stuff, look, Conte's documented that the squad's not good enough. And Spurs are, again, we mentioned that word transition. They need, in order to close the gap between Liverpool, City, they need five, and United, they need probably five or six players. Now, you can throw your toys out of the pram all you want. But you're not getting those five or six players. You're not even getting three or four of those players in January. You're just not.
I think he'd be
you're lucky
stupid
to get
to
all
think
of them
he,
in the summer.
Yeah, yeah. You'll be lucky. So, I mean, I'm surprised we've got one, to be honest.
He took that role when the transfer window was closed in September, whenever it was, September, October. And he would have known that the money required and the quality required to overhaul that Spurs squad. He would have known he'd have got maybe one, maybe two players in January at best. And then it's about getting through, as they were alluding to post-game yesterday. Basically, for Conte, it's just about setting a foundation, trying to get into the top four or bridge that gap as close as you can between now and the summer. And then the summer is where he can really put his stamp on it. But in January, you are not doing the kind of business that Spurs need to do. And that's why I always said with Newcastle, they're not doing the business that they need to do because in January, it's a fool's market. And
I mean, there's not a lot, let's be honest, there's not a lot at this moment in time for Conte to be that unhappy about other than...
They've lost one game in the last six.
In the 10 games that he's had for the league for Spurs, he joined when he drew to Everton, so I've counted, it was 10 games. He's got 21 points, he's third. Man City and Liverpool, only Liverpool get two points ahead, Man City a different world. Now, we've got to bear in mind here that Spurs have got the best run of get. They're four games in hand over Chelsea, 11 points off. Not only are they a Europa League position away, I mean, Conte took Inter to Europa League. He loved it. To even think that Spurs could get Champions League is something that would have been laughed at in October. So we can't act like Conte's not having a good time at the moment. He is. And that's with that squad. So there's a lot there. I'm not saying I believe that a lot could happen. I do think he took the 18-month contract, or not 18-month, whatever it was. Yeah, it would have been about 18 months or so.
Yeah, it was.
He would have taken that contract to say, OK, I'll get you to summer. January, you do what you do. He's running that contract down in the summer because he's saying, probably, by the time my contracts end, I will know whether you've kept to your word. He's given him a time limit. I don't blame him either, because Levy's not done it for Poch. He didn't do it for Jose, and he hasn't done it for Nuno. So Conte's got every right to turn around and go, I'll give you till June, July. If that squad's not where I need it to be, this project ain't for me, but I'll get you where I can in the meantime. Levy, I'm telling you now, if he wants to remain as Spurs chairman, we'll do it. Because there is no way any chairman can survive having those three managers and not doing anything with it. Mm. No chance. He'd be strung up to the point
where is in Conte's court here.
And Kane must know something as well, because even Kane's gone out and said, we've got one of the best. I think he's even almost given an ultimatum with Conte. If you want to keep me, you will do this business, because I've just told you in public, this is one of the best managers in the world. If he don't do it, they deserve to go. I would have no problem if Conte turns around and goes, you've given me two players, that's not enough, see you later. And I don't think the Spurs fans would be against it either. So I think you're right. I think he's got every right to say, I might leave.
Also,
he's given an honest answer, that's all.
Also, I think three home games on the trot now, one in the FA Cup and two games against Southampton and Wolves. So, you know, and then in between that, they've got City, Leeds, Everton and United. So there's games.
Not a bad mix of games.
Good. So,
I mean, it just depends where they drop the Arsenal fixture in and stuff like that. Who knows? I'm conscious we've lingered on them. I mean, the Leicester game, we spoke about it already. Couldn't believe it. Bergwijn's showing what he's got, though, isn't he? I mean, I never understood why. I would have done anyway.
I don't get why. I don't understand why he's got not that, played him, or managers have fallen out with him. Every time I've seen him, he looked to make an impact. He's got a bit about him.
Yeah, he's got that pit bull kind of build about him. He's got that, like, you know, stockiness, and he's... He showed up in big games. He did it against Man City in his debut. So
he's got a bit of pace as well.
He's fast. I mean, I think there's bigger problems. Bergwijn's not one of them. Who knows? It depends it depends where the money's coming from. If we're not getting any takers for the other three, it might be a case of, look, we've got to take the money while it's there. And you know, he might be someone they think they can replace. The other team, here we go. It feels weird talking about Man United when they've won two out of two, beat Brentford 3-1. And I've got to be honest, I was a bit surprised that they beat West Ham and, well, the manner in which they did it.
Well.
Marcus Rashford steps up in the dying moments to give them the 3 points. Yeah, I don't really know where to go with that one. When I look at all the teams... Man United in fourth just blows my mind. And they've got two games in hand over Chelsea, to the point where they'd only be 2 points off Chelsea if they win them both. So, I mean, we talk about managerial situations. I don't want to go into too much detail about it. But, I mean, how long's he been there now, Ranić? Similar amount of games, if not a little bit less?
Conte time, a little bit about that, yeah.
Yeah, he's doing all right. about 18 points, something like that. So he's up there. We talked about Man United and their squad, what they need to do in that transfer podcast. I mean, the big one will be the West Ham win, wouldn't it? That'd do wonders for them, I would imagine.
I like the one player he has brought into the team, which I've not heard of before, Elanga.
Yeah, he's a good little player.
He's a little fine there.
Have you seen their run of fixtures, their next four games? It's quite healthy. Burnley, Southampton, Leeds, Watford. So if they need to pick
Burnley
up a...
need to get a move on if they're going to make this survival. I mean, that could be a tricky game for United to go away to. Southampton, I mean, dig their heels in.
I will say, though, I mean, those games then roll into Atletico Madrid, Man City, Tottenham, Atletico Madrid, Liverpool, Leicester.
Yeah.
So just as it gets easy, it then gets very difficult.
If Ronaldo has a little hissy fit in the middle of all that, that could be trouble.
Yeah, tough one.
It all handles on his attitude on where they finish.
Yeah, he didn't set a great example, did he?
I do believe it's all down to him. It's pathetic that I've been chewing on the bench.
I mean, did you see that image of Greenwood looking at him when he went off in a strop? And you think that's your role model, doing what he's doing? It's just, it's weird. It's really weird. Well, on a day where he's renewed his contract till 2025, probably for good reason, fair play. Last team in the first segment, we come to Brentford. 3-1 defeat to Man United at home, 2-1 defeat to Wolves at home. How bad's it getting for Brentford at this moment? They've played three more games than Everton and they're only 4 points ahead of them.
Well, you can see
Costa's
four losses on the bounce.
I see why he's doomed them.
I think his post-match analysis of Man United was brilliant. I think he was right. They were unlucky.
It was blunt, wasn't it?
It was blunt. But to be fair, in that game...
It was honest.
They were the better team. But I do think after the Wolves game, the fact that he got sent off, or he got booked, rather, by the referee, the fact that he came out after that Wolves game and had a bit of a rant and started ranting and raving, I think that's a telltale sign. That the
pressure
is starting to just... Not necessarily coming from the board, but I think he's now probably semi-conscious of the results. And he's obviously publicly trying to stick up for his team, which, as I say, post-Man United, yeah, absolutely, they were unlucky because first half there was only one team. And, you know, Brentford were putting in the hard yards and definitely deserved more out of the game. But after that Wolves game, Wolves, to be fair, played very well, controlled the midfield. And I just think him coming out the way he did after the Wolves game, it just showed that there was little telltale signs of pressure starting to build. And the question will be now, they don't obviously have the benefit of Premier League experience to get out of the rut and to put on a run of a couple of games just to get a win here or a draw there just to stop the rut. So, I mean, after the international break... I know they've got Palace as one of their home games. I don't know who they've got before that because I know we play Norwich the midweek before. But
I think they'll start targeting games now. I mean, they're on 23 points after 23. You look at Norwich, Newcastle, Watford, Burnley. They'll look at them as their rivals now, won't they? Well, they'll think, can we go win them games? Or they're going to have to start prioritising games and just having a free shot at the likes of, what is it? They've got Man City coming up. I mean, yeah, good luck with that one. Newcastle will be the one that they'll have to target. Well, they've got Newcastle and Norwich back to back.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you look at those run of games. City at the Etihad, Palace at home, Arsenal away, Newcastle at home, Norwich away, and even Burnley, you know.
Them three games will make or break their season.
Lose two or three of those, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're in trouble.
You're in trouble.
Yeah,
need to get Tony scoring. I haven't seen a lot of him. His 30 goal score in the Championship hasn't come to fruition in the Premier League so far.
He's having to plug a hole that they haven't got. Benrahma, since he's been gone, they need that player. They need that creative player, to be honest. And I think
Eriksen could be the answer.
Yeah, it's worth a shot. 6 months, you know, for Brentford. I said about Villa and Coutinho, there's a difference between Villa and Brentford in my eyes. You know, Eriksen's just, not only is that, that's one of the biggest signings they will ever make in terms of name. For Brentford, I mean, that does
everything
wonders.
That happened before, that there's a player in that. He was starting for Inter Milan.
It's their first kind of flagship signing, if you like, big name signing. Now, look, if it works and he does really well, I don't see him necessarily staying beyond the summer because I think there'll be another team that comes in for him. But he needs to, he wants to rebuild his career. He wants to play again. Brentford play good football. The style suits him. Obviously, he's Danish as well. There's a few Danish players in there as well. You've got Thomas Frank as well. So I think it will, for all parties, it will suit what they need. I will still say, even though Brentford could get dragged into it, I still don't think they will get dragged in. I think they're quite lucky that they'll benefit from the fact that they're still 7 points clear of Norwich. And obviously Everton are 4 points behind them and can't buy a win at the moment. So I still do think they'll be okay. They'll pick up a couple of... Look, on average, I reckon you need 33 or 34 points to stay up. Probably not even that this year. So, look, they're on 23. They probably need 3 wins. And quite conceivably, they could get a couple of those over the next 4 or 5 games. So I still think they're going to be okay. But there's no way you'll need more than kind of 33 points to stay up this season. And based on the fact that Newcastle are on 15 and sitting in 18th, you know, to get to 33 points there, you're looking at 6 wins. I mean...
That and they've got a few teams in between them as well, like Leeds, exactly, Everton.
Yeah, well, exactly. And if you take the bottom three as they are now, that bottom three combined have only won 7 games all season. So, look, they're not going to go on a run all of a sudden. Newcastle could be the anomaly to that if they get their transfer business right. But, you know, Burnley, Watford, even Norwich, God love them, they'll try. Everton... You know, all of a sudden, Everton aren't going to turn on the taps and win 3 or 4 on the bounce, nor a Norwich, nor a Leeds. And as you alluded to in that fixture list there for Brentford, there's actually a fair amount of the bottom 4 or 5 that have to kind of play each other. So, you know, eventually, over the next month, there'll be 1 or 2 of them that kind of get cut adrift. So I think they'll be fine.
So that's the first segment done. I've got a hell of a lot of predictions that I've quickly got to get through, so bear with me. Shouldn't take me too long because we didn't do great, to be honest. And I've also got to make up for last week whereby I just didn't make a note of them, so that was my bad. I will ask you, Jace, actually, what was the score of Brighton Palace, mate?
1-1, mate. What are you talking about?
Cookie, you get your 3 points. That takes you up to 34. Bang on. No one else got a point there. Leicester Brighton, we alluded to, was a draw. 1-1. I got 3 points out of that one. Happy days. Puts me on 39. And also, Jason got a point out of that one. So he goes to tied with Cookie on 34. We then come down to Man United West Ham. Obviously, Man United nicked it in the dying seconds, took that point away from your Cookie and gave it to Kossi instead, because Kossi had Man United down as a win. Only the point, though, so he's on 25. Brentford Wolves. Obviously, we just alluded to that one. Cookie, you get a point. You said Wolves would win. Jason, you're the only one, funny enough, that doesn't get a point here. me and Kossi get 3 points each, because we both said Wolves would win 2-1, which puts me into the 40s now on 42. And Kossi's coming right up your ass on 28 points. I still don't know how that happened. And then I can blitz through the last two. Leeds, Newcastle, none of us got right. We all said Leeds would win. And Leicester, Spurs, well, we said Leicester would win or it would be a 2-2 draw. I cannot believe that in the 94 minutes 30 seconds, I was correct at 2-2 and we still won. I will obviously take the victory over 3 points there, though, however, so happy days. That's predictions done. That leaves it as me on 42, Cookie 35, Jason 34, Kossi 28. Happy days. Let's go on to the next run of fixtures. then, and then that will obviously allow us to see how much time we've got at the end. So let's see how smooth sailing we can be here. Let's just briefly, just because it's, I think we need to just keep banging on about them, to be fair, because they're fifth after 10 games. In 10 games, they've conceded 4 goals, Wolves.
And no one's talking about them.
I mean, they're about to potentially lose Traore. And to be honest, I mean, I was surprised, actually, because I obviously went on Twitter. I was looking about it just to see from, you know, what news was coming out from Spurs. And I caught a few Wolves tweets. And I was surprised to see that they were not panicking, but they were annoyed that the investment, you know, oh, we're letting go of Traore and we've got no one coming in. And I was sitting there thinking, well, Neto's going to be like a new signing when he comes back anyway. And look how well you're doing without him.
I think I mentioned this earlier on in the season about Wolves, in that the owners seem to have gone very quiet. I think it was actually when Nuno was linked with Spurs and we were talking about the relationship with Mendes. And was Mendes moving to Spurs and shifting his focus at the time and getting Nuno out? Him shifting his focus away from Wolves because the money simply wasn't there for him to move his network of players. Yeah, and there was a lot of talk, actually, if you looked at specifically Wolves fans and the owners and stuff like that, there wasn't in the summer a particular desire to spend money. There was very much a couple could go, but it was very much in order for them to buy, they have to sell. So I can understand the fans' concerns because, granted, Traore is inconsistent. He is still and has been a key cog for them, whether you like it or not. You know,
just as he hits a little bit of form as well.
Well, exactly that. But yes, Neto's to come back, but where's your Traore replacement on the bench? You know, that's the thing.
And I saw a tweet, and do you think they've got a fair point? You know, we've all been open and honest, and I'm not going to sit here now and go, because he's joining Spurs, he definitely is worth this much. But it was a fair point. It's considering this is also a couple of years since that transfer that I'm about to refer to as well. Do you think Wolves have got a point by saying, asking for 20 million, or accepting a 20 million offer is actually a bit underwhelming, because they were referring to Iwobi of Arsenal going to Everton for as much as he did. Yeah. And Iwobi was half the importance of Arsenal as Traore is to Wolves. And they almost feel like they've been undercut.
Well, look, here's the thing, right? If you look at it on a purely stats basis, then 20 million pounds is probably the right.
When you too much on a stats basis.
When you start looking at it from a contractual age, and I'm going to say the word potential because he still is only 25 years old. You know, people forget that, but he is.
Yeah, that surprised me. I looked at that and surprised.
So, you know, his peak years, so he's probably got 2 more years of kind of rawness before he gets to his kind of start, before he even starts touching his peak years. Now, yes, he's inconsistent. Yes, his stats are rubbish from an assist and goals perspective. Yes, he's a bit of a loose cannon. You spoke about this last week when Kossi was on the show, about having an outlet that can sit there and drag you up the pitch. Now, in the Premier League, that's invaluable. So I can see Wolves' point. 20 million quid for a 25-year-old that... Oh, he's actually 26 tomorrow, so he's 26. But... 20 million quid for what has been for them a kind of key cog in the last couple of years. I can see why they'd be underwhelmed at the same time.
Bought him for 18 million as well. Yeah. So they've not even profited really.
Well, but they've... And to think 2 seasons ago, he was linked with 40 and 50 million pound move, you know? So look, I mean, the stats are the stats. He's played this season, he's played 22 games and he's got 1 goal. So look, ultimately value to its true self-worth comes. But I still think in a Premier League team, again, no disrespect to Wolves, but they're one of those kind of mid-table teams that are looking to break into that top 6. Even at Palace, I think he's rubbish, but I would still have him at Palace as an option. Because one thing he does do, if you're Wolves, Neto comes back, you still, even though he's rubbish, you still need 2 or 3 players to mark him out of the game. Because if you don't, he'll just tear you apart with his pace. He might not have the end product, but he'll open up space for others. And I think for Spurs, I know there's talk of him playing wing back in the kind of Victor Moses role like he did at Chelsea. But what he will do, if you imagine that front three of Son, Kane, and I don't know, Bergwijn or whoever you have on that kind of final.
Moira, Bergwijn, yeah.
Yeah, whoever. You think of that front three and then think, you know, Kane at the moment is getting doubled up on because he doesn't, we said it in the World Cup, he doesn't have the pace to get past someone. Son's not in the team. Lucas is having to play different roles and stuff and work and whatever. You get those three up top of them, Adama Traore is a kind of right wing back. All of a sudden, teams are going to have two or three players on that right wing back, which, if you think about the shape of the team then, shifts the defence to the left, opens up for Kane in the middle and Son on the left. So it will have its benefits.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, from a Wolves perspective, it is an odd one because we bashed on about it. And you can go back and listen to the old podcast and Cookie would have been on it as well. We laughed at the stats and the stats are not great. But from a Wolves perspective, I can see it. 20 million for a player that wasn't that long ago their starting winger. A bit underwhelming, the cost of it. And to think what you can get for 20 million these days...
It's good.
You're going to be hard pushed to find something.
I think it's the right price.
In a January market as well, it's a good. That is a good price. That is.
I think it's the right price. Full stop for Traore.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Well,
I mean, they wanted 25 million. They were never going to get 25 million for him. Let's be honest. It comes down to what can you produce? Can you put the ball in the box? Can you pull off some crazy shot and score a good goal?
In defensive rules, what I will say, and again, we've said this before, the value is in the eyes of the club. How much does he, how many points does he win them a season? You know, so 20.
And going by his stats this year, he hasn't played as much as he probably liked to this year.
No, because they identified that he wasn't end product. We identified it, and Wolves changed it up, and Wolves started winning games. That was winning the reality. Conscious lingered on that one a bit. We might need to discuss Wolves, just see what happens with them. But you're right, Jace. They haven't spent as much money recently as people think they would. And that is a bit surprising. But they have got a great little team, fair play to them. And I enjoy watching them.
I think earlier on in the season, they were getting overran in midfield. But Moutinho and Neves seem to have clicked again and they seem to have got that balance right. And
Gian Moutinho at 35, what he's doing at the minute is insane.
Well, the thing is, him and
he's running games, he's controlling games at the minute.
Well, this is what I mean. This is like a match of the day again, said it. So I'm not saying anything that's kind of common knowledge, but Neves and him, Moutinho will kind of sit a bit like your kind of Xavi type player. He'll sit there, he'll pick it up, he'll spray it off to Neves. And Neves is the one that's got the legs. Neves is the one that will then...
He hit that really good form, Neves, and he's never since then, no pun intended, he's never got to that next level, has he? Never quite got there.
Waiting for a move, do you think?
Well, I think Neves is a good player, but with all due respect to him at the same time, his best season came in the Championship. And I know
he's 24. I mean, you know, he's got still a bit about him. He's only turns 25 in March. So again, another player that's got a bit of time, but you're right.
He did it for Porto, but let's face it, the Portuguese league, there's two or three teams. It's a very low base. It's not the best in quality. So he did it for Porto, got on the scene. He got his move to Wolves when they were in the Championship, which
had his best season.
Again, let's face it, if the relationship with the owner and the agent weren't there, he would have never gone to a Championship club in the first place. But let's face it, he tore it up in the Championship, as you would expect him to. Now, some would say in the Premier League, well, the Championship is faster. So with the Premier League being slower, he should have done more. But I think actually, what you tend to find when you get to the Premier League is how you use the ball and what you do with it, you've got to think a lot harder. And it's a lot harder... You're not going to be able to ping 30 yards.
I think he does his job in the midfield. You know, I think he's just a normal midfielder who does his job in the midfield next to Dendonka and let Moutinho control the game.
I think he should be doing more. I think he should be doing more. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at it from, again, stats aren't everything. I know. But
did he not be an understudy to Moutinho, where Moutinho's showing him the ropes, and then later on in his career he moves further up the field?
He should already be doing it. I think you're right. I think he will. He should be that. But Moutinho, I mean, how long is it until you start handing over the reins? I mean, how old's Moutinho now?
He's 35.
Yeah.
Is Neves anywhere near producing the quality of spraying balls? He should already be showing signs of that, I think. And yes, I mean, three assists in a season, max, that's his best season. For me, I mean, Neves to me is the equivalent of what Ward-Prowse is to Southampton.
Agreed.
Should be. Ward-Prowse is in a completely different ball game to Neves at the moment. And when he first joined Wolves, I remember Man United were touted. He is the Man United midfielder. For me, at this moment in time, whilst I probably still think, and that shows how far Man United have come, that he would still be an improvement, probably.
Oh, he would be.
I don't think he's hit the heights that he should have done. And he's got time, though. He's got time. Well, but
Let's face it. Number one, that Man United talk all came because his agent is George Mendes, right? Number one. Number two, his best season for goals, not even assists, in the Championship was his first season at Wolves, and he got 6 goals and 1 assist. So for all the plaudits he gets, he's only ever managed to score 6 goals, and that was in the Championship. That's the 5 ratio.
Well, I mean, Moutinho's 35, and for me, last season, Moutinho got 1 goal, 1 assist. That shows me that, and you know, previous to that, he got 1 goal, 6 assists, 1 goal, 8 assists since he's been at Wolves. I almost feel like he's looked at it that season and gone, Neves, you're still not doing it yet. You know, I mean, he's 35 years old, for Christ's sake. He should have been learning. He's been there, been with him for 4 seasons now. So I don't know. I think he's got a bit of work to do, because Dendonka's got no assists. Neves has got 1. So, I mean, they need to, and that's probably why the goals are drying up. It's all down to their wingers, to be honest. But hey ho, Wolves, I mean, they're where they are. If they get them players to elevate their game, because I rate Dendonka, he's a tidy player, does the job. I rate Neves, but he needs to do a bit more. And Neto, I rate as well. And we know what Jimenez can do if he can get out of that sort of mindset, which he's struggled to shift. Let's run through these then. I was going to say let's breeze past a few of them, but to be fair, that all bar one, they've all got a bit to sort of touch on. Leeds-Newcastle. That surprised me. Leeds nil, Newcastle 1. I mean, Cook, what do you make of that one? Leeds hot and cold again.
You don't know what you're going to get with Leeds. I mean, you go to West Ham and put in the performance you do, you think, oh, Jack Harrison's back, gets a hat trick. Oh, they're going to start flying now. But I mean, Daniel James up front, I don't get it.
You read my mind on that one. How have they not moved on a striker?
He's better off on the wing.
I don't think he's good enough to be in the... I mean, you talk about Jace, what we just said, Traore, 20 million. Oh, yeah. They bought Dan James for 30 fucking million.
I mean, my opinion of him is exactly the same. What I will say, I'll summarise the game up in 2 minutes. That Leeds, actually, Newcastle are very lucky, because in that first half, from what I watched, the first half an hour, Leeds absolutely dominated them. You're right, Daniel James up front as a striker, no idea. But when they did get the ball to him and he ran through the middle and blitzed them, it did work. But missed opportunity for Leeds, because they did actually in the first half an hour, Newcastle looked like they were in trouble. They were at 6s and 7s at one point.
That and the goalkeeper, I mean...
Rodrigo had the first time.
The goalkeeper, it's not the first time he's just a liability when it comes to shot stopping. He cannot save a ball to save his life. That free kick is straight at him. He's a comfortable save to anybody else.
Yeah.
I know he's young and he's got time to sort it out, but he's had too many high-profile mistakes in the last 2 years for me. I'd be looking to think, you know, you got to up your game or we're going to move you on.
I mean, he's still a very young goalkeeper. Like, to be fair, he pulled off a couple of good saves as well, to be fair. But look, in summary, big win for Newcastle, though. They needed that. They needed that more than Leeds, I feel. If they didn't get that, I think they'd have been in big trouble.
Leeds, 3 games unbeaten, Newcastle.
Yeah, so a big week ahead for them in the window. They need to get it right and they need to, you know...
Are they buying the right players, though?
No, they're not. Even this Diego Carlos, if he comes in...
He's not going to improve them.
Well,
he's not going to be up for that.
He's going to need time to...
Individual quality, he would improve them, but as a team, same with Dele Alli. Dele Alli's not going to do what that team needs.
Here you go. Here's a fun fact for you, which probably just shows more so that they don't know what they're doing and that they're kind of relying on agents. Dele Alli has the same agent as Chris Wood and Kieran Trippier.
Oh, there you go, then.
So just
it's lazy business.
Yeah. So they're basically... They've got Kieran Trippier over the line. They've basically said to that agent, oh, have you got any other clients? Because I know you've got some that have got potential.
You're spot on. You're probably spot on with that. Well, let's talk about another manager that seems to be on and off getting a dime out of his players. Cookie!
Oh, here we go.
Hey, I'm not saying nothing, mate. This is your chance to sort of give your two thoughts and then we'll give ours. I don't think we need to say much. The scoreline says a lot for itself, doesn't it? Home game against Burnley.
Says a lot for where our mentality is at the minute. I mean, this whole January has been shocking, to be honest, on and off the field. I don't know. I just don't understand the timing of everything. On the field, I just think some of the players have got Man City in their heads. Because ever since that game, it's just not been there. Martinelli's been covered. He hasn't had the same impact. Okay, you can look at the midfield. The absolute mess in there. I mean, Granit Xhaka coming out in an interview saying he's not going to change his style. Well, that fills me full of comfort going into the rest of the season. I mean, the Thomas Partey. I mean, your nation, you just get knocked out of the African Cup of Nations. And then 2 days later, you've been forced to come on in a League Cup game. That's like the same as England have been knocked out of the World Cup and be like, right, let's restart the season next day. Get your kit on, let's go. That's a bit harsh. I just think the management of him has just been shocking, to be honest.
14 red cards under Arteta now. Like, yes, what is going on? I mean, it can't be Mikel Arteta didn't have it in him. I mean, yeah, you would have put a tackle in every now and again.
And
but
he's just putting it down to the youth of the team. Well, I'm sorry, but...
It's the experienced ones that are doing it.
Surely you must know when to go into a 50-50 challenge and not go over the top and get too aggressive. Just weird.
Here's the thing, right? I don't think the red card situation is actually Arteta's fault. I think, like, for example, Xhaka, he's played under two or three managers now.
And I've said this, he's got to go.
Well,
I've said this, I've not taken back to him ever since his little kick out a couple of years ago. He needed to be moved on.
On the red card, taking it back to the red card situation again, though, Xhaka, you're never going to get that out of his game, ever. Ever, no. Ever. That is him. He'll get a red card once in every 7 or 8 games. You're not going to stamp that out of him, no pun intended. You're just not. As for the rest of the team, we talk about the most experienced players in that team, but the most experienced players, if I'm not wrong, Xhaka's one of them, and he's still only 20... Is he, what's he, 27, 28? He can't
29
be
29 now. I think he's 30 this year, something like that.
But when you talk about experience and youngsters and blending youth with experience, let's think of other clubs that do that. Let's think about Man City and when, for example, Phil Foden, for experience, he had David Silva to learn off, who was a winner, who won trophies, who knew how to win, who had a winner mentality. You know, you look at that Arsenal team, and it's no disrespect to any of them because they've all come from different clubs and different backgrounds. But normally, when you have a team of youth, you normally have 2 or 3 experienced heads that not just are experienced by age, but they know how to win. And the single biggest thing that Arsenal have never done, which I've always said, in terms of the spine of their team, centre-back, midfield, striker, you need in each of those positions, if you're going to have youngsters for the most part, you need at least one centre-back that knows how to win trophies and has the experience to shut games out. You need a midfielder like a Patrick Vieira or someone to come in that knows how to boss that midfield, has discipline and knows how to sit back and when to go forward. But again, you need someone in there that has been there and done it in terms of winning trophies and seeing games out. They don't have it. Partey to a point with Atletico, but not so much. And then up top, the same thing. You need players that know when to be selfish, when to play it back, and when to huddle it in the corner and stuff. Now, they tried that with Willian, and it was an absolute disaster. And on paper, he would have been great because of all his plaudits and credentials at Chelsea.
Forgot about him already.
And Aubameyang obviously had a pedigree at Dortmund, and Ozil had it when he was at Arsenal. He had pedigree from Madrid, and, you know, he had loads of plaudits from back when. But, you see, the problem is they just never have consistently, like, where is your winner at centre-back? And everyone was like...
I think they've hit the reset button on the whole centre-back situation because it was getting to a point where it was easier to carve a turkey than go Arsenal's defence.
But, see...
I mean, it was terrible. I mean, we've never had that big, winner at centre-back.
But you've never had those big winners post-Wenger. You've never had those big winners anywhere on the pitch, in my opinion. The last one, arguably, you had of that elk was someone like a Van Persie or a Sanchez. But eventually, they all go off the boil. You had Ozil, who was like, when you got him for 40 million quid, he was like the best, one of the best, most coveted number 10s in Europe. He came to...
I understand why they're hitting the reset button. They've gone to square one and they've gone with the plan with, oh, let's go with the youth and bleed them through the academy.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
But comes the territory of dropping points against Burnley. And you, as an Arsenal fan, if that's what they've done, that's fine. But then Arsenal fans can't complain when results like that happen on Saturday or Sunday. Because with all due respect, Aaron Ramsdale, he gets plaudits, what, because he shouts at his centre-backs when they're not doing their job. But
and in fairness to Sunday's game, we did have to look for the experienced players to get through it. I mean, Lacazette missed an absolute sitter.
Well, yeah.
He needs to put them away.
Lacazette being one of them, what did he do? He missed the sitter. Mm. You know, so what do you do? And with all due respect, Ramsdale coming out after the game saying he's frustrated tactically. He's one of the newest and youngest players in that team. What does that say? There is no, and you take Ramsdale, right? Ramsdale, you look at that defence. Gabriel, who I think is good and got potential. Ben White, I still think he's extremely overrated. But you look at that team and where's your winners? Like Ben White of Brighton, Ramsdale of Bournemouth and Sheffield United. Kieran Tierney, he's a winner from... Tierney, actually, he's very good and he's got that winner mentality. Then you go to the midfield. It's so lackluster. There's no winners.
Yeah, midfield is completely... completely short going forward.
The only three that seem to sparkle for Arsenal or get it, and they're not winners by any stretch because they're still young, is Saka, Smith Rowe, and I highly rate Martinelli, but they're not winners. They're not. And with all due respect,
it's hard to judge Smith Rowe and Saka as if they're winners when they're what, 19, 20, 21.
No, but what I'm saying is they have the right mentality and they actually, you can trust those three to put in a shift and actually, but you still need that experienced attacker to slot the chances away that they create. You still need that experience in midfield because I always say this, and in the Premier League and in all football games, midfield is where games are won and lost. If you don't have that combination midfield correct, then game over. Because the minute you lose that midfield battle...
And that's what's holding us back from where we are now to getting to that top level.
I mean,
that midfield.
over, you know, the last few years, you've gone from Vieira and Gilberto Silva to what? Xhaka and whoever partners him in midfield as number 10 for Xhaka and Partey, or, you know, whatever. And for me, Diaby will always be Arsenal's biggest what if, because I actually think he would have been your Patrick Vieira. I actually think he would have, if he stayed injury free, he was the one that you're actually missing. But if you think about it, it's criminal that since Vieira and Gilberto, Fabregas aside, you've never replaced them. Not even near.
Spurs go on about not replacing Eriksen, and you know, that was a few seasons ago, but Arsenal have never really replaced Vieira since he's been gone. It's a really odd one, actually. And I think the thing that's so frustrating for Arsenal fans, and I completely get it, is it's been so obvious for years that you've not had a player like that in that centre midfield. Yet it's taken, even to this day, you know, they thought Partey might be it, and, you know, fair enough, but these players are so underlooked. Gilberto Silva was so important for Arsenal. He just did everything. You know, Vieira took all the headlines. He was the guy that got into arguments with Roy Keane, and he was the captain. He was the leader. One of the best centre midfielders you will ever see. You know, Arsenal, as much as I hate them, Vieira and Henry, you just cannot take that away from them at all. But I bet if you sat Vieira down and said, how important was Gilberto Silva? I bet you he would have said, without him, I probably wouldn't have been able to do my job as well as... He's just everything.
One thing that always baffles me with Arsenal, and I'll keep this short because I know we've gone on the... One thing that's always baffled me is they always play good football. They always seem to have it up top. They always seem to have the number 10, but they always seem to ignore the back line and the two midfielders, the glue that basically holds that team together. Like, 3 years...
Even today, they're going to do it again. Yeah. Even now, the only talk that Arsenal are talking about is Vlahovic. Now, in my opinion, yes, they would love Vlahovic, and he would improve them drastically because Aubameyang's going to go. But you've still got Lacazette and Martinelli, who, let's be fair, could do a job better than what Xhaka can do for Arsenal in the centre midfield. But you will still go with Vlahovic and play someone like Lokonga in centre midfield. And it just will never make sense to me. And it is, and I mean, I'm happy, don't get me wrong, but it must be so frustrating when you just need, and I would honestly say, if Arsenal had a centre midfielder, two centre midfielders with Partey right now, or even just two in there that would be Partey and someone, and then maybe, depending on how confident you are in your defence, just one more. I think even with Lacazette and Martinelli, you'd get top four. Mm. I honestly believe that. But
I think everyone knows what we're missing.
Absolutely.
Because they've done the hard work in getting all the deadwood out now.
But when you look at all the other clubs around Arsenal, it goes to show you, like, when you think of Arsenal's status, if you took, for example, you've got, let me just quickly run through them just to give you an idea. Like, it shouldn't even be up for debate. Not saying these are realistic, by the way, because you might say, oh, well, other teams. But let's be fair, the other teams haven't done it yet. So if you made your move early, who knows? But you've got Leeds have got Calvin Phillips, instantly improves your side. Instantly. Not even a debate. Ward-Prowse instantly improves your sentiment. Even if we're talking about depth, he instantly improves it. Villa, you could take two off them, would instantly improve it. Leicester, Tielemans, instantly improves. Brighton, Bissouma, improves. We just mentioned Ruben Neves, improves. It's just like, I mean, when it annoys me, looking at West Ham, Declan Rice and Soucek, them two players should be at Arsenal. I'm being honest. They should be at Arsenal. That's the type of players. West Ham shouldn't have them too.
Well,
Man United are the same. I'm not just throwing Arsenal under the bus here. Man United should be the same. How have all those teams got those players and they're sitting there with Fred Matic and McTominay? It's ridiculous. Yeah, it's fine, it's absolutely ridiculous because you two are three nitpicks away from taking those players from them clubs and becoming a force.
Same with Spurs.
Calvin, I'd take all of them, probably. Well,
Spurs last summer were meant to have, not last summer, the summer before, they were meant to get Elise and Eze. And they didn't grab them when they had the chance, you know.
I mean, the difference with Spurs when they bought Ndombele, Lo Celso and Højbjerg is they identified there was an issue and they went for it. It hasn't worked, but they look like they want to go again. Arsenal have just never done it.
You're going to have a list of your roads that you live on with the amount of players that we could have gotten linked with and we never go for.
And you still buy these players that you don't need, and you'll probably buy more wingers and strikers this season.
You know what the problem is at Arsenal? Final thing on it. Edu, director of football.
And yet, funny enough, Edu was fairly influential in Arsenal's centre midfield, and yet, you know, you can't identify it. We've went on about Arsenal for a lot there, but it was a point, you know, as much as I say, I don't like Arsenal. It is just ridiculous. You can sit there for that long and just rattle off them names and you just go, God, I wouldn't even doubt they might have a chance at getting easily top 2-3 if they had them players. But what do we know? We're just football managers in disguise. Everton Villa. Now, Benitez is obviously gone. Big dunk comes in, does nothing. Aston Villa win with Luka Dinja left back to make it even worse. I probably would have expected it, to be fair. You know, they're surprisingly, at the beginning of the season, I think we had them both pretty much in line with one another, give or take, probably Villa slightly higher, but they couldn't be any further apart at this moment in time. We don't need to talk about the squad with Everton. We've discussed it. I mean, they're linked with a manager today. I don't know if you've seen it.
Victor Pereira or something again.
Yeah, someone the eighth time. Been a batching old manager, isn't it?
I don't know. I mean, that's another club that's afraid to just do what they should. I mean, let's be fair. If Everton are knocking on the door, when we talk about Everton, and I know we joke that they're not as big as they think they are, but when you're Everton, you should feel confident enough to be able to knock on Brighton's door and say, Graham Potter, we want you as our manager. Like, as much as they probably wouldn't get him right now, they should feel they can. And yet...
Well, again, if they
They're close to doing a Watford here, aren't they?
Well, if they get that manager in, that's Mashuri listening to football agents again. There's no plan. He's been on that shortlist about... He's been linked with them umpteen times before when the job was free. So there's no plan. None.
I mean, they were linked with Gattuso. Oh, my God. It reminds me of Spurs in the summer. It's just horrendous managerial links. You're absolutely right, though. From the past few weeks, they are in so much trouble. To the point where, I mean, Newcastle...
I called it start the season with Everton.
You did. I mean, I don't think you saw this coming to the point that it is, but I mean, Newcastle, if they carry on and get a few wins and they make some signings and can get a few points, I just can't see where Everton are going to get 15 points here the way they're going.
What did Charleston and Calvert-Lewin do at the summer? What do they do?
Well,
go for 10 million if they go down.
It's not a case of what they do, it's what Everton have to do. They'd have to, well, I think I spoke about this a few weeks ago. For Everton's financial position, they will have to sell at least one of them because otherwise they're not going to be able to do the business they need to do in the summer that they aspire to do. So at least one of them has to go.
And just quickly, Villa. I mean, obviously, we talked about Gerrard and whatnot. I mean, they're linked with a few more signings today.
As I say.
Complete opposite of Everton. They're the ones that have got a plan.
They've got a plan,
they know
yeah.
Where they want to aim for. I've said this about Buendia. Obviously, I thought it was a waste of money for what they bought, but he's actually stepped up and Coutinho's got that instant connection with him already.
Well, I mean,
he's had more productivity in the last two games than he has all season.
I mean, wouldn't you? Your manager's one of the biggest Premier League midfielders of all time, and you've got Coutinho playing alongside you. I mean, if you can't learn your trade there, you're in the wrong game, aren't you? So, I mean, he's probably having an absolute field day with them two around him. I mean, Cossie's not here, and Sideshow Bob scores two goals. And one of them was a beauty. I mean, Watford announced Ranieri's sack today. Absolute calamity. I know, Cookie, you love Watford. I mean, it just says a lot. They were better with Isco. I mean, what is going on with Watford?
It's the wonderful merry-go-round of Watford Football Club.
I mean, look, yeah. I don't want to repeat myself because we spoke about Watford a lot previously and what their issues are. And it's plain and simple. Dean Smith's gone in at Norwich. He's got them functioning as a team. Watford's problem has always been every manager they've had to piece together a bunch of individuals. Now, granted... Oh.
Breaking news. Have you seen who's emerged as hot favourite to be Watford manager?
Go on.
Some random manager. Oh,
Roy Hodgson. So, Jason, you are more than welcome to take this one on, mate.
Oh, no.
Alex Crook has just announced it. He's emerged as hot favourite to be named Watford manager.
Well, I'll tell you what, if he does, they stay up. He will. I was about to say, the biggest problem Watford have, on paper, they've probably arguably got one of the strongest front three or four players in that bottom cluster. But what they don't have is an identity, and they don't know how to win games, and they're a team of individuals. But if there's one manager that can bring that out of them, and he's got a knowledge of Italian football, so the owners, the Pozos or whatever they are, will admire that. But if there's anyone that will keep him up, he is that. He is that.
Unveiled as early as tomorrow, apparently. I mean, that is a... They must have known. They must have known
That's a sensible move.
That surprises me. Now, that is interesting. I mean, he's got a lot to do, but I mean he's proved he can do it. So
only one word of warning. It did take him around 8 games to get Palace firing. So is he going to have 8 games this time? But I do think the fact he's got knowledge of the Italian game, and a lot of their players come from the Italian leagues, and he's multilingual. So he'll be able... Yeah. I never thought I'd say this to the Watford owners, but that is a sensible appointment. If anything, that is a sensible appointment. But it shows that they're accepting the fact they just need someone to come in and do the job. Which,
one appointment too late, though.
Well,
probably should have been the previous one. Probably should have been the previous two. Eyes peeled. Let's keep a close eye on that one. I know you'll keep a close eye on it, Jace. I know he goes down well at Palace, so that'd be interesting to see. Speaking of Palace, not a lot to say on this one, to be fair. Well, actually saying that, I don't want to go into too much about it, but...
I want to rephrase that.
Yeah, actually.
Quite a bit.
I mean, it's got to be bad when Dermot Gallagher finally says, I probably would have overturned the penalty decision, because that guy is the most whipped FA guy I have ever seen in my life. Yeah, two shocking decisions. I mean, how you can say that a guy who's trying to score a goal in the penalty area is not interfering with play for any defender is an absolute shambles.
I will say this now. I have never, ever, ever, in my time of going to a football game...
Me and Cookie have got the popcorn.
Honestly, I have never, ever felt like when I've gone to a game of football that a game is being rigged. But that game and that official, it was obscene. And it wasn't just what's been spoken about in the media, which is Firmino offside, which is a penalty that should never have been. It's the fact that there was a chance on 79 minutes at 2-1 where Benteke was clean through. Now, he was actually a yard onside, but they blew straight away for offside and waved the flag when they're meant to let the play flow and then review retrospectively. That was number one. But not only that, there was also a time when, and I don't know if you guys watched it, where Elise jumped up for the ball and the player did what Harry Kane is infamous of doing and arching his back and letting Elise fall and arch over his back. Everyone in the ground thought, took a gasp and thought Elise had broke his neck. And the referee literally looked at him and went, get up, and let Liverpool carry on with their attack. And it took Curtis Jones to stop and say to the ref, no, he's genuinely hurt. It's a head injury, right? So the first thing you should do as a referee is blow your whistle. He looked at Elise, saw his head snap off the ground and said, play on. It was ridiculous. Alisson got warned 9 or 10 times for time wasting. And, well, look at the match record. How many yellow cards did Alisson get? I'll tell you, zero. I've not normally been one for conspiracy theories, but it stunk of big club bias in that game. And it stunk of Premier League wanting Liverpool to be kept in the title race because...
Well, it raised a lot of questions, you know, in the media about that, which is you know, where it gets a bit dangerous. I mean, I've seen the offside. And as far as I'm concerned, if the defender's having to consider that player's there in an attacking threat, it's interfering with play.
I think he might be a little bit bitter there.
Well, maybe, yeah, he might look at his face. Oh,
good God almighty.
Fishing hooks out.
And it's no secret, is it, that Liverpool get so many decisions and so many...
They're called Liverpool for a reason.
Oh, it's crazy.
I mean, I'll tell you what, though, what I will say, take all of that shit aside, barring the first 35 minutes that Liverpool did dominate, after 35 minutes... We absolutely battered them, and we should have won that game. We should have won. We should have at least got a point out of it, but we had the chances to win that game. And but for Alisson, I think, you know, if that was their other goalkeeper and goal. Stephen Warnock, actually, I don't know if you saw this morning on Twitter through the Football Daily thing. He had quite a good analysis of Van Dijk and actually said Van Dijk had one of his worst games he's ever had for Liverpool because he looked so tired and lethargic and his running back wasn't the best. But we, and special word for Elise, that Elise is a special player. Like some, I mean, that lob, if that went in where Alisson had to backpedal and went in, oh my God. But we fair play to Vieira, 2-0 down, come out and, I mean, we had two chances at the end of the first half. And I even said to Cookie, I think, because he had the cheek to WhatsApp me and say, what did you say, Cookie? The game's dead, it's game over.
It was, but not in the way it ended up. I didn't expect it to be the way it went down.
From that point on, when you messaged that, we absolutely roasted them for most of the game.
Yes, you did, in fairness. But then,
yeah.
We did. And
I thought it was good. I thought after 2-0, I was like, oh, I'll check back in half hour and find it's 5 or something. Yeah. But it never really got there, to be fair. Fair play. I mean, I saw something, it's gone now, but it was really interesting, without going into too much detail again, that Vieira at the beginning of the season was favourite to be sacked. And since then, he's had 7 or 8 managers go before him. So I think that's credit in itself. And, you know,
one of them as well, to be fair.
I think we all were. I think we were all a bit concerned. But the final one, again, it hasn't... Well, I mean, this is the kind of result that should be throwing the league table up in the air, but it hasn't really done anything, has it? Southampton getting a draw against Man City. Great. I mean, Southampton are in the form of their lives. I mean, it's 5 games and they're up there with Liverpool and West Ham and Spurs. So fair play to them. And that is a massive result. Well, I say it hasn't done anything to the league. Liverpool win their game. They go on 51 points. I've seen a bigger gap get closed. 6 points, that'd be.
It was coming. City were going to drop points. You did feel it in the Brentford game, our game, that it was coming.
Mm.
You know.
I mean, it was a lovely goal. Walt Peake, lovely goal. It was a stunner. And I think Southampton... You know, it was a smash and grab. They tried and they did very well. I mean, it took 65 minutes until the goal came in. 26% possession, 7 goals, 7 goal attempts to Man City's 20.
And they conceded a lot of headers. They reckon they conceded a lot of set pieces. So, You know, it was the only way that was going to come from Man City. They couldn't break them down.
No,
just could not. I had no ideas whatsoever. Sterling wasn't on it. Jesus, I mean, I don't like Jesus anyway. I think he's
better than what you.
He's not your number nine.
Oh, you said that and went on mute, didn't he? Oh, he dived off mute there, look.
Did.
He's exactly what Arsenal need, to be fair.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Southampton are 12th. I mean, Villa, Southampton, Palace and Leicester, surprisingly. I think that's a bit of an insult for Leicester. I mean, that's a sign that Leicester have dropped off massively because they're all in that little pack sitting
there. They're in the right place.
Well, I think they are in the right place, but I think Southampton and Palace would be fairly happy with that. I don't think last season they would have compared themselves to Leicester. So fair play to them. And like that, we're done. So next week, it will be, well, Cossy will be back. I won't be here. So Jace, you will have the pleasure of taking the reins between you and Cossy with content and what you decide to talk about. No
get
doubt
your be... suit and your yellow tie ready.
Yeah, get your breaking news banner on. Keep a close eye on Twitter because there will be a lot of news coming out. Is it 11 o'clock deadline again?
I assume so, yeah. It normally is, isn't it?
Normally is, and then they have a two-hour window to get the deal done, don't they?
Yeah, the form's got to be in before 11, I think it is, and then they've got 2 hours to get it done. So that'll be interesting. Got our own deadline day, look. Right, Cookie, I will see you the next time I'm on. You'll be on, so I'll speak to you then. Jace, have a good deadline day show, and I will see you all soon.
Thank you very much.
See you later.